Good morning. I'm Chris Futrell. I work for a company called Claranet, who's a managed services provider who's based primarily in London in the UK. I'm what's called the Messina Systems Development Manager in Claranet, which, as with all my previous job titles, that means absolutely nothing to anybody outside the company, unfortunately, because Messina is one of our internal projects. I'll be taking you through a basic review of my project Messina that I actually manage. I will also go build up the business context setting for it and actually build through how Claranet uses it and how Postgres is actually useful and how we've been using it over the years. So, building through. Okay. Just to start off, basic background for Claranet. Company's founded in 1996, based in the UK initially. Started as a very, very basic ISP provider, so all the connectivity products and things like that. Over the past 12 years or so, it's actually developed into a managed services provider today, which provides services across Europe and into the US to all of our customer base, focusing now on managed services and pushing aside the ISP as a subsection, actually, of the company. Claranet, as I said, spans Europe. We have primary offices in the UK, France, Germany, Netherlands, Portugal, Spain, and our primary US office is in Atlanta, and we have bases in New York as well. As it says, 12 offices, 16 data centres, managed by a rather extensive, competent staff. A lot more detail on our website, put together by our marketing department. I just copy and paste. Messina itself. I've worked for Claranet for 5.5 years now. The project itself is roughly 8 years old. It was simply created as the business order management system, so it takes all the orders from the salesman and actually processes them automatically and provides all the support to every department in the company from the point of quotation for the customer all the way through to delivery and provision of the services. Before that, it was all pen and paper. So the initial need that actually drove the creation of the Messina project was simply because the orders kept falling between the desks. Messina itself is directly involved with generating the entire, I would say probably in the UK, a good 70 to 90% of the revenue stream for the UK offices. In some countries, it actually deals with 100% of the revenue stream, so it's a very highly sensitive and core application for the entire group. It supports all the core business processing. It basically does deal from start to finish with every single customer support. There's virtually no department inside the entire company across the entire group that don't use Messina in one way or the other. Because it handles all of that and handles all the logging, the auditing, the tracking, and all the information, it also provides allows us to standardize KPIs and analyze how we're actually performing, how much we have sold, how much we haven't, and how many customers we've annoyed over the past 6 months. That's a constant set of improvements and allows us to adapt the business processes and hence Messina to support them. So, as I said, Messina is a core system. It's actually purely business critical. Downtime is not really much of an option. There was an instance about a year or so ago where just as the management were off to go for a management conference, our Postgres server decided to actually take a nosedive and we lost the RAID array. It just completely went horribly, horribly wrong. At the time, there wasn't actually much focus on actually ensuring that the system would fail over cleanly, would be happier if something went horribly wrong in this situation. We'd also discovered it been corrupting the backups as the hardware failure was very, 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 very specific and was only causing problems on part of the RAID array. So as a result, we actually lost Messina for an entire day. This was rather painful, to say the least, and was many a long night for me after that, ensuring that the procedures and the tests were all very complete. So downtime is something I don't even want to consider anymore. It's caused me much havoc, much sleepless nights in the past. So Postgres itself. when Messina started, it was a very, very simple application. Over the years, I've developed it and pushed it into effectively roughly 5 modules. We have the interfaces themselves, so the internal user interfaces that all the staff to use. There is actually a customer view as well, which actually makes use of the C.NET framework and actually uses the MPG SQL to connect to the Postgres server. Their internal one is a sort of a mixture between different open source languages, which use a hybrid of interactions to the database itself. We have a web services element, which deals with inter-system communication. Clarinet is a compound of Clarinet's backend systems is a compound of lots of different open source projects. Sina being at the centre of them and pushes a lot of information out for reporting. And obviously, there's a case of is this service live? Has it died? And we internally use web service communication between all the different components to ensure that they're kept up to date. We have a file store just because the salesmen like attaching huge documents to orders for some strange reason. The back end, which is all the boring scripts and Perl support scripts and so forth, just to ensure everything keeps ticking over and hasn't blown itself up. And finally, the database, which is probably where a good 60 to 70% of the entire project resides. Postgres itself, we actually have made extensive use of the internal store procedure language inside Postgres. We have both PLPGSQL and PLPerl store procedures actually within the Sina itself, and there are some operations that run purely inside the Postgres database. For example, the actual invoicing itself that produces all the invoicing documents for all of the companies that run within Sina are all done purely within Postgres. The only thing that actually runs external to that is the script that calls the store procedure. And that executes at least daily for every single company. So we're actually, if Postgres effectively stops working or there's something wrong with it or the database itself wasn't actually reliable regardless of what it was, we actually would be affecting our revenue directly. It's intrinsically related to it. In addition to that, obviously all the contract renewal and cancellation happens via the user interface or via back-end scripts, but that itself triggers off other things using internal store procedures, externally relating to other back-end systems, contacting suppliers automatically and so forth. All the sales performance tracking, all the information relating to profit margin analysis and all the boring stuff that the senior management team actually appreciate and pay great attention to is all done automatically inside Postgres, again, using heavily stored procedures. Most of the presentation is quite literally just a select out of a table and just gives them an information or a graph if they really want, which they usually prefer. And there's a lot more sitting in our database. There's a good 70% or so of the primary core business logic of Clarinet actually lives inside the Postgres database itself, as opposed to being layered around inside the interface itself. I already mentioned it's already gone wrong once in the history of me managing the project. Disaster recovery, very, very, very important. Everybody always says you must take backups and must make sure they work. I can quote from experience of how important that is. Obviously, Postgres has its own log shipping and warm standby facility. We now actually have multiple warm standby servers just in case one of the ones we have goes wrong. We also take the regular standard database dumps. Our database isn't probably the largest in the world. We only need to amount to about 60 gigs worth of data on disk. The dump files aren't huge. It can take in excess of half a day to restore, but it's the last ditch attempt just in case something does go wrong with any of the other warm standby servers, and fingers crossed it hasn't. In addition to that, to quote our systems administration department, we have a support contract because of the stuff we don't know about rather than the stuff we do. I've already made provision for everything I think could go wrong and possibly could go wrong and used every facility within my remit to actually ensure the system survives and keeps going. But there, by no means is that going to cover everything. So obviously an external support contract becomes essential at that point. And I just so happen to take that out with Enterprise DB. Getting more into the nitty-gritty of the internals of Messina, well, a little bit. Messina itself is an application. It's while we have one project, we don't actually have a single deployment site. The entire project is managed and developed by my team. We're solely based in the UK, and there's only one team across the entire group. What we do have is multiple sites deployed across the group, as one for every single country that actually uses Messina. So we have one based in the UK in the London data centres, one in Paris, one in Germany. We have one for Portugal and one for Spain. The locations and co-location of the different installations varies depending on which country wishes to take responsibility for their own installation, but in general, we have disparate sites which are capable of exchanging information. Based upon how each country operates, unfortunately, this means that we do actually have issues with rollout of versions. One of our offices doesn't like releases too often, so they have a tendency of lagging behind. The worst cases I've had them 14 months behind in releases compared to the rest of the company. So as a result, we started to move Messina towards being not just a configurable installation, but actually completely able to self-adapt. This basically means that what we've done is we've actually adapted the code within the Postgres database itself to change how it works, to actually effectively adjust, rather than based on configuration directives, but based upon the database itself, its physical structure, the existence of actual store procedures, how they operate, the return codes, and so forth. So while we do have some configuration directives, there are very, very, very few of them. A lot of it tends to relate to how the actual system looks. Very simple example. Very example. I've missed a word. Apologies. We do actually have a general global logging facility that logs the changes in every single table, since when something goes wrong on the invoice, every department wants to blame each other. So I have to keep track of everything that every last person does. So I have a single stored logging procedure, stored procedure that logs, that's attached to every single table in the entire database. And previously we actually had that previously logging was always done with hard coding, storing information, it was told to actually store in a particular table in a particular form. This actually analyzes the table itself. So all I have to do is hook it up and off it goes. It's very fast, I must admit. I was quite impressed by the speed. It's actually written in PL Perl. It basically means I can actually now have my team manipulate the entire table, change it, and it doesn't actually care. The logging will happen regardless. It doesn't actually matter. Because of the facilities it uses in PL Perl, it actually works from any version of Postgres that we've actually ever got installed across the entire group. So even when the other countries refuse to upgrade when I tell them to, we're still covered on that score. It does actually reduce the amount of workload on my team significantly, and we are only a six-man strong team. So dealing with a company where they have more installation sites than I do people can be rather intensive at times. But this is just one example of how it can actually be done. We then effectively have release procedures that apply new SQL statements, adjust the functions, and again query the database on the structure, amend, adapt. This is all obviously primarily done through the system catalogs itself. Messina as a project. As it is, Clarinet has shifted its focus to being a managed applications provider, which, by the way, they do actually plan to support Postgres as a managed app in the future. We have several large customers building up, but it does mean that the business model has changed. The days of when we're as plain ISP is a completely different business model to the way things operate now. We deal with solutions rather than individual orders. The focus of information and the processing information is very different, and Messina has to change to support those business operations. There's also the case of where we actually deal with much larger managed application solutions. Therefore, our separate installation sites are near on useless for some of those larger ones. The communication is insufficient. So we're currently looking and testing out not so much a larger single Messina system, but a much more highly integrated one, one that acts as one, that incorporates Sloney One into the actual mix, where we can provide partial or full replication of various bits of information between the separate individual sites where Messina is actually installed. That will then allow the database to adapt as need be between the different sets of data and automatically read that information, pass back and forth and so forth, and integrate information as it goes round. I'll admit it's not the simplest solution, and probably not sounds like the most ideal, but it actually does fit the requirements of most of our users within Clarinet itself. Just as a bit of background to give a view of why we actually need to actually progress to using these disparate sites and how adaptive it is. Messina has actually been using Postgres since version 7.2, and at the moment I think we're running three different versions of Postgres throughout the company. My apologies to the Postgres group, we're not actually using 8.3 yet, but we are, I think the earliest installation I've got at the moment is a 7.4, unfortunately. We're ranging all the way through to the 8.2 series. So you can imagine the differences between the major releases can actually be rather significant. So the actual having standardized common code that's actually capable of analyzing the database, the version of it, and adapting accordingly is actually quite important to us. Sloney 1, if I remember correctly, is actually capable of actually performing an in-place upgrade as such, which allows you to push data between different versions. So as a result, we can actually use that as part of the adaptive process for the data to process to transfer between different sites at the moment, but we still have that in testing. Okay, I think I've gone a little bit fast. Oh, questions? Simon.
You mentioned how much, what percentage of the group's turnover went through the similar system. Do you have a big number for us in millions?
roughly, in excess of 3 for the UK alone, pounds. The rest of the group, I couldn't actually recall the number in euros and dollars off the top of my head.
But if we said 5, it would be comfortable.
In excess of that easily, I would have thought. So, yeah, we are pushing a relatively high revenue through it all.
And have you ever lost a penny?
Only due to presentation faults. Never mathematically. And all the maths is generally done internally. We've had rounding errors actually at the point where we've
just... Sorry, I didn't mean rounding errors. I mean, you know, just sort of like, has Postgres ever corrupted
no.
anything so that it would be possible?
It's always recovered. It's recovered from every single state. And in fact, when the server was actually failing, I was highly impressed as it managed to keep going while two disks in the RAID 5 array were intermittently disappearing. It was very slow with a load of a very, very high load, but it did actually keep, it kept soldiering on. I have no idea how it managed that. I was very amazed. Any more questions? Yes, sorry. Go on. It was quite a journey. I wasn't actually with the company when they started, but from my predecessor and from what I've been made aware, the primary reason was the transaction processing. Back in the year 2000, MySQL support for transactioning wasn't exactly in existence, I think, more than anything else. Or at least if it did exist, it wasn't actually very, very stable. Because of how much data we actually have and what the data we are processing in Postgres, the transactioning is very, very important to us to actually catch anything, roll back, or process accordingly. But I think that was the primary driver. Beyond that, all the little nuances about versions and things like that, I think the rest of it was down to personal preference at the time. Sorry, yeah?
Oh, yeah, you said that I think earlier on you told me you implemented a lot of your business logic back in
yes.
the rather than sort of external.
Yes.
Any particular reason for that?
Again, that's partly historic. The actual original first invoicing procedure was actually originally written in the actual database itself. We have actually got a wrapper around the database which acts as a business object layer for the people that don't know the database. Anyone is going to have a lot to pay if they ever actually get into my database and start messing around without knowing what they're doing because it's so sensitive to the changes. But so I give them a software layer for it. But it's actually, because of the skill set I've got in the way I can actually manage it and the fact that the business procedures are so different in each country, the fact that the database adapts and the code itself adapting to the database actually introduces, there seems to be some performance issues regarding the way it's actually set up. So we actually kept it in the database, we kept the speed up. It's actually a lot easier to move one module as well, we actually found, than actually moving all the separate modules. The five disparate logical modules are actually optional. Obviously, the database isn't very optional, but the interface, they don't have to have an interface. They don't have to have the web services or anything else like that. I'd like them to, but I can't force anything on them. So it's primarily for ease of maintenance. My team and I spend a lot of time living inside Postgres. I think 8 hours, at least 8 hours every single day of the week.
Oh.
No, yeah. We use the JDBC to one of the interface servers, and we don't have much performance problem. Because of the application server we're using, we do have a couple of connectivity issues regarding connection pooling, so we avoid that like the plague. But It isn't generally to do with the driver itself, it's more to do with management of the project and the code.
Okay,
well, yep.
What platform or platforms are running your Postgres databases on?
Linux. So, yeah, just a, yes, every single last one. Various different flavours of it, but it is all Linux.
One question.
Yeah?
What applications are we really
using? For internally, we use the ColdFusion application server. I will be the first person to put my hand up and say I'm not a fan, unfortunately, after having used it for 5 years. But it does do its job. Yes?
So, broadly speaking, you've got, say, three different versions of Postgres.
Yes.
And you've designed the adaptive elements from the ceiling to
yes.
reduce the maintenance on it so that you can run on 7.4 in Portugal.
Yes.
Or 8.2 in France.
Indeed.
Theory and, okay.
In the long run, over the past 5 years, it's usually been to do with a clash of differences between the different countries. Each country used to be semi-autonomous, so they had the option of rejecting anything I said, which doesn't help. The company's only recently gone through a reorganization, so I'm now a group entity, and they have to listen to me a bit more, but they still have the option of ignoring me if they wish. Woe betide them if they ever do in the future now, but that's generally what's happened to it, and I have to make the provision just in case, the same way you tend to make backup hardware just in case.
I suppose it helps with upgrades as well.
It does indeed. It's been very, very helpful. Yes?
So if the backups were being corrupted, how did you actually end up?
That would be we actually have backups. We were very, very paranoid at the time. We were storing backups in lots of different sites. We did have a cold standby server. We had seven copies of this cold standby server. They'd all corrupted. Those had actually corrupted. We do actually have a separate development test server, which we also clone the database onto on a regular basis. That one was all right. Because it actually we used pgdump piping into PSQL overnight to stream it in. That one was fine. We would have noticed instantly when that had died. So because that copy of the live, we had something to fall back on. Everything else was a write off though, as we spent half a day finding out, unfortunately.
So did you lose any time periods?
Four hours worth of processing, I think. It was noticed relatively early on in the day. I think it's when the load picks up in the morning and the drives just decided to give out, if I remember correctly.
So you had to
contact
people and say,
yes.
Can you rerun?
Yeah.
Business requests.
Yes. Between that and running downstairs and finding I did have a spare server, thankfully.
So, what rate control should we be
doing? Well, they're not entirely sure. The server's now sitting in a rack, and nobody wants to touch it because they're not entirely sure what went wrong because all the lights went green next time they turned it on. So, but yeah, it's a little HP chassis, nothing special or phenomenal. I don't think they make it anymore. Yes.
What does your
There's a bit of a range. A lot of my developers have a tendency of like living in Vi inside a command shell, which is not the most productive. We have CVSs. Sorry. Well, my old boss used to beg to differ at some point, but I'm not too bothered. I tend to live in Vi now and again anyway. We have CVS as a versioning repository. We have it, before anybody does ask me why, we did look at Subversion. Nobody could actually give me a good reason why to switch, so I never did. So, beyond that, I have a couple of people that develop in Eclipse. Otherwise, it's a strange combination of text editors and bits and pieces like that. I also do have a collection of build servers and staging servers and things like that, which have standard build and deployment scripts, but it's generally all done with just plain text editing, and I don't constrain them to any strict application. I constrain them to procedure.
Do you find that that's a benefit?
I haven't had any huge problem. I control the operating system they run. I control the operating system, and I control the deployment procedure, and I control the build and release systems. So the build and release systems check that their code works there, and we have multitudes of copies of things and so forth everywhere to make sure that they conform before they're allowed anywhere near CVS. So I've pretty much eliminated the need for them to be too specific on what they're running on their workstation, as long as it's similar. 5 years, I haven't hit any huge problems on that yet. I also don't tend to use lower level languages, compiled languages like C yet, which means that I haven't actually had to worry about compiler versions and so forth. I just care which version of Perl I'm running. Sorry, yes?
Do you have a centralized monitoring system to keep track of the whole system outside of Postgres?
Yep. It's very, very basic. It's more just to check it's alive more than anything else. I have a couple of web services as well that poll specific functions inside for Messina's activity. But the systems administration departments in each country that host the hardware are responsible for monitoring their own system. So in the UK, I think we're employing Nagios to just poll the server to make sure it's alive, and then also poll for the responses from each of the web services I provide, and obviously that the web services element is still alive. Yes? There's nothing truly extensive. I've looked into using PG Agent before, and I've suggested it to, because the actual maintenance of the hardware isn't technically the area I'm supposed to be in charge of, even though I do put my size 12s all over it. I do like the idea of actually using, they do use SNMP polling to check various other things on the server, but my recommendations so far have gone unheard by the sound of it. I haven't actually seen that, so they tend to use just standard scripts to perform pings, port connections, and check responses from particular things like HTTP servers and things like that. So it's all very, very basic. Simon?
Sorry. Obviously, this particular deployment has been very successful for Postgres. Has that affected people's decision-making inside the group as a whole? Do they say, we'll think about using Postgres now, or they say, you're just lucky, because you love Postgres.
I must admit, I'd never met Postgres before I'd actually started working at Clarinet, and I must admit, I won't switch back now. And that's my personal preference. A lot of the developers that worked with me over the years have actually said the same thing. Within the company, there's a very, very heavy MySQL presence, and that's been there since 96. One of the things, they haven't actually expressed a willingness to think of switching, because these things they would actually switch are things like the core Radius database. And that scares everybody on every level, trying to switch something that's central. I do intend to actually try and put 8.3 through its paces with the Radius data with a live feed of information, though, because I'm interested to see how well it performs, just from after having seen the improvements. If it benefits well, I might actually make the suggestion, but I can see a lot of hectic rewriting going on if that actually happens. Yes? Yes. Yes.
Given that you sound like you've had some good experiences and the one bad experience, do you think there's good mileage in taking on an external support organization? Have you found it useful?
I haven't had to make too many support calls. In fact, I've probably over the past year only had to make two. But it has been very good and very supportive of me. Internally, there isn't actually a tremendous amount of Postgres knowledge in the company beyond my team and me. And there were instances where I've actually had Postgres core dump due to some really, really obscure bug, which was way back in version 8. The support contract, they were quite happy to take my entire configuration and the horrendous SQL statement and actually try and work out what went wrong and fix it for me in 8.0. But in the end, the upgrade actually was a better option, as it was faster to turn it around, as unfortunately the one SQL query that caused that was actually an in-clause with I think approximately 5,000 items or something. So it's a rather frightening SQL statement and badly written in my opinion. I have read a lot from the community. Virtually everything I've picked up in the last 5 years has actually been from the community itself. I unfortunately have very, very little time to actually contribute back, but everybody in the community has my gratitude for a lot of issues, from things to setting up PITR to understanding how queries should be operating and things like that. And there are various nuggets that I do actually ensure that my team have actually read. And over the years, the community has actually provided invaluable. I do believe I'm subscribed to at least about 75% of the mailing lists out there just so I can try and keep on top of what's going on. But I'm afraid I'm a bit of a lurker. Anything else? Thank you very much.